still will scream. Those fruit on my tree is the biggest you see. But which way's up? You know when you're down. You've gotta stand tall with your feet on the ground. You must stand tall with your feet on the ground.
And so it goes, the Moody Blues under moonshine on this series of summer specials that we're actually opening up as far as the midweek drive is actually concerned, to the extent that we now need to press this button here.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
And what better way to actually launch this summer special season of shows than actually going to the premier tourist attraction for all summers across the globe. It is, of course, the York Maze 2017 scenario. We've got Darth Vader. We've got the Death Star. We've got Tom Pearcey. Yay, Tom! How are you?
Good afternoon, Alex. How are you?
Wonderful. Well, once again, the Great Yorkshire Show kind of overlays the official opening of the York Maze, and we were doing our duties at the Great Yorkshire Show with all the excitement that was there. I think Nigel Pulling secretly, he always realises that the Great Yorkshire Show is very much the curtain raiser to the official York Maze opening. If he hasn't realised it yet, I'll make sure that next time he's on air, we'll make that point quite clear. But it has been revealed 40 English years since that story that took part and took place a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. There were people over the year, Tom, I know, who were thinking, ooh, it could be the anniversary of 2000 AD. They could have a judge. Oh, it's gone. And that's the kind of excitement that happens when you mention the York Maze. What can we say? We will get Tom back. It just proves that life and the York Maze continues in its own magical way. All right, let's not get all starry-eyed yet. I know it's a theme we were actually going to work into. Let's actually say, Tom, are you still there?
I am here.
Marvellous.
With you on this very planet, Alex.
You see, this is what happens when the rebel communications get intercepted and you actually have a Death Star comprised of maze that sort of loops over the whole thing.
You know, I think there was some sort of interference there, some giant magnetic force as the Death Star moved past.
Well, clearly. But anyway, as we said, it's not 40 years of 2000 AD. Obviously, it is. It could have been 2000 AD. It could have been 40 years since The Spy Who Loved Me actually celebrated that. It could have been 40 years of Starburst magazine. But as Starburst magazine, of course, launched with a copy of Star Wars there. Star Wars is what it's all about. And you had the Stormtroopers out in force officially open it.
Sentinel, the amazing guys from the Sentinel Squad who did a great job of coming to open the maze. And amazing costumes and characters, really good fun.
Now, Tom, I know over the years that, like myself, you wear your geek credentials with pride. Is this even more exciting than the Star Trek year, than the Doctor Who year, than the James Bond year, than the Harry Potter year, and so on? Has it just been that little bit more flavoursome in terms of Star Wars?
For me, this is probably my favourite one so far, Alex. Yeah. I'm a big original Star Wars. Yeah, it had its moments in the latter movies where we can't all be that enthusiastic, but the original three, I think, were just great.
But the question has to be asked, Tom, and you would lose respect for me if I didn't ask it. Why no Jar Jar Binks?
Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, how rude. You know, I was looking at the thing and I sort of made out, obviously, the Death Star. We've got Darth Vader clearly there. I think it's Han Solo that's kind of to one side. But, you know, that...
It is. I actually dressed up myself for the opening as Han Solo, and one of my friends very kindly referred to me as Han Solo during the burly years.
Unbelievable. You know, it's just what you said, critics, everyone's a critic. But, you know, I was secretly hoping that we'd see a full Jar Jar Binks design to actually sort of have the Gungans, because, I mean, you know, we welcome all, and let's face it, if Doctor Who can be female, why can't Jar Jar Binks have a place in the York Maze?
No, and again, no. Jar Jar Binks would never, ever be coming near the maze, I'm afraid. It was hard to decide which character to put in, but it was actually Harrison Ford's 75th birthday, the day before we launched the maze, so that was quite a nice little tie-in, so... That's why Han Solo was in the maze.
Absolutely, and long may continue. Obviously, it's been a bit of a bittersweet year as far as Star Wars fandom has been concerned. Losing Carrie Fisher, of course, earlier. We also had the news that clearly for Doctor Who fans, Deborah Watling passed away. But the thing about the maze, and let's actually just break this down. I mean, it's open for the season. I couldn't believe when looking at the website, yorkmaze.com, of course, you've got over 20 rides, attractions, and shows. You've gone crazy, Tom.
Indeed, it's all going on at York Maze. Yes, people are spending the full day. There's a lot going on other than the maze. The maze is the big name, and it's still, you know, the main attraction, but there's an awful lot going on too, and, you know, if you're not into Star Wars and you're not into mazes, you can still have fun.
Well, I mean, it is actually, by the time this actually is transmitted again, sorted through, it'll be a historic moment because we'll be welcoming to Yorkshire, possibly for his second visit, Ben Lewis. Ben could be with us for this particular item, and possibly even we should be bringing Lisa Maria Schwarzenauer, who's from Austria, to the maze.
Oh, excellent. Likes a bit of international flavour at the maze.
I tell you, Lisa Maria, when we actually revealed that it was a Star Wars theme, her little eyes lit up. She said, "This is why I've become a postgraduate student at the University of Lincoln, to actually have this joy of coming to the York maze." It's great.
We shall look forward to welcoming her.
Yeah, exactly. Talk to us about some of the rides. Is Colonel still in vogue? I mean, I know you've already devastated the news of Jar Jar Binks fans, but you can't say that Colonel and his good faithful companion aren't going to be a clear part of the maze.
Colonel is alive and well. He has not popped into popcorn yet, and his girlfriend Sweetie is still at the maze. And we're just hoping no little niblets are on the way quite yet.
Yeah, so he hasn't, I mean, because there obviously is the question, would he actually be seduced by the dark side of the Force? Would he actually go down that side of things? Would you know,
we've had a word with him about controlling his feelings. You know, very worrying.
Yeah, he needs a bit of Vulcan mind control on that point of view. But obviously we're not talking about that franchise, we're talking about Star Wars. So really we need to focus on the Force. Does Yoda appear?
We have Yoda at the very end of the maze, actually, in a little, you can pop your head through Yoda's cutout and have your picture taken as Yoda, so I'm looking forward to framing you into that one night when you visit.
Well, funny you should say that, because in so many people probably would say, Yoda and me, what's the difference, really, in many ways? It's just, you know, inconceivable. But yeah, we'll look towards that. And again, looking at some of the others, the jumping pillows there, you can have a laugh on the Cro-Mania ride, you can actually take a seat for the new, I'll say again, the new Crobot 5000 show.
Yes, and rather worryingly, there is a villain now at the Crobot 5000 show, Alex. The Crow Man from the Crow Ride has got a partner, the Crow Lady.
Oh, my word.
Things have taken a turn for the worse, Alex.
This is what happens when Chris Chibnall announces a female doctor. These kind of things open up into a whole range of things. Tom, as a Doctor Who fan, I mean, I've been surprised, actually, at how volatile and how vitriolic some of the quotes and social media have actually been about this. And on this programme, we'll be hearing the views of William Coles, who's actually over in Turkey. He's had to leave the country to actually escape from the whole scenario. Alan Stevens, of course, our Doctor Who scholar, has got a series of views as well. We might even ask Arthur Weingarten over in San Diego what his thoughts are. You know, those of you who followed the Who series, well, I mean, with the female master, Missy, and Michelle Gomez's incarnation there, it shouldn't be a major shock to realise that, you know, the Doctor's going to be female. Are you in the camp, Tom, which basically says, I'm sorry, it's a Time Lord, not a Time Lady, I shall stop watching the programme?
I don't think it'd be a case of stopping watching the programme, but I just don't think it was necessary to, you know, to introduce into a lady. That isn't what the story's about. It is a Time Lord, and, you know, sometimes gender equality just goes a little OTT, doesn't it?
Or indeed species equality. My personal sort of hankering was, well, what? I mean, these days we don't see any evidence of Lassie, Rin Tin Tin, Snowy from the Tin Tin series has been almost abandoned. Why can't we have a canine doctor?
Well, yeah. Woof, woof. I mean, would you object, Alex, if we had Jane Bond?
My point with respect to this, and I'm being momentarily serious in this particular edition of the Midweek Drive, is if you are looking to create a positive role model and a positive character, why not create a completely different character? Because surely when you start looking at those notions, and it has been mooted actually within the Broccoli camp, of course, that they are considering, emphasize, having a female Bond, a non-white Bond, and so on. You've got to really kind of redevelop it along the lines of being an alternate take. Maybe that's the route. I mean, if you are really upset, and I appreciate there are other things in the world, North Korea, for instance, that you might want to be more worried about than the gender of the Doctor. But if you're really upset, why not simply take a leaf out of the Star Trek franchise and say it's simply one possible alternate timeline?
There we are.
Which I think in the case,
solved everything.
Well, in the case of the Doctor, surely that you know it works on a number of levels. Really, it's simply an alternate view. It's like Kelvin Prime, it's Who Prime, and so on. So. It's great. Besides, you know, every so often, Tom, I know we've kind of engaged and looked to actually get our inner femininity out from that whole point of view. Or am I just speaking from my fantasies again? I don't know. It's a different life.
Well, you'll be glad to know that the crow lady in our show is actually a gentleman, so we've covered all bases there.
Well, exactly. This is, I mean, Tom...
A good old panto dame. You can't go wrong.
I always felt that the York Maze would be ahead of the game when it comes to the whole notion of transgendered artists, which is... It's fantastic. It's just genius stuff. Let's get down to the basics again. YorkMaze.com, is that the go-to site that people should go to find out details about the maze?
Yes, it's nice and simple. Even I can remember that one.
Splendid.
YorkMaze.com.
And although we probably would advise people to book ahead in advance, is it still possible to book on the door?
Yes, you can walk up and pay, that's no problem.
My word.
It's cheaper if you buy online. And also, don't forget that the tickets for our amazingly scary Hallow Scream event went on sale last week.
Good. So. You see, you say that, it's a bit like saying it's countdown to Christmas now. I mean, there are those of us who are just beginning to kind of get a smidgen of summer, and you think, no, it's...
Well, I'm afraid that the tickets fly out. There was a bit of a bun fight for them, so we have to get them on early, because everyone's badgering us to say when are the tickets going on sale, so the answer is now.
And Hallow Scream is, of course, one of those autumn essentials that you really need to go through. In fact, this year I think we're doing a couple of things. We're doing Musicport in Whitby, which is of course just pretty much around the same time as Hallow Scream. So you've got a festival at Whitby, you've got the York Maze, Hallow Scream. It's just a win-win in the north is all I can say. I've just come back from Ask and Brian's little package that they're doing at Stewart Park when they're refurbishing a whole range of things there from Ask and Brian College. We have two questions to ask you, Tom, even though the show's to the Wednesday Midweek Drive, the only thing I need to point out is this has been a pre-record. It won't explode at the end of the radio station. Don't worry. The radio station won't blow up. At least I don't think it will. But it is a pre-record that we've had to, because of construction works, reshift and relocate. So, nevertheless, allowing for that and the fact that I haven't got any Midweek Drivers in the studio to ask the questions, so therefore somebody has to, consumer concerns, have you, Tom Piercy, had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Absolutely, I think we've covered a range of subjects today, Alex.
Yeah, well, no messing about. We thought it was so special. Let's jump in there, including, of course, the classic, oh, the line's gone dead, we'll have to dial them up again, which is fantastic. It's an old favourite, but people like us to kind of return to the classics, I feel. So, next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future? Probably in this case, probably next Thursday, when we'll be meeting you in person.
Indeed, yes, we're looking forward to your visit, and we shall be glad to show you around and point you in the right direction within the maze.
Hey. And I think it's nice that we've done the whole piece without any clichéd Star Wars effects whatsoever, really. No kind of... or any sort of asthmatic approaches to sort of acting scenarios. No kind
press
of...
Press the button, Alex. You must have something there somewhere. Press the button.
I think we'll go back to Ellie Goulding, starry-eyed.
This is Jean Bruce Scott
and Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Splendid. With the following words, a whole new aspect of humanity has been revealed. I am returning to Istanbul to try and swim another exotic strait. This time I'm having a shot at the Bosphorus, not the Hellespont, slight difference. Only one mild problem. Thanks to all my manic rowing, I now have chronic tennis elbow. Duh! Not at all sure I'll cut it. Still, better than last year. Race was cancelled because of a coup. The words, not mine, because obviously the craft behind those words can only be that of William Coles in Turkey. Yay!
How are we?
Splendid, William. I'm kind of getting used to this package that we're doing for the Midweek Drive on Wednesday, which is being produced the Friday beforehand. It's very strange, and in a completely different studio, as I said, 126 miles north of where we normally are. But it's okay, and I'm sure the Midweek
Drive...
It's very complex, but it's all down to structural work, you see, and hard hats and themes and things that are going on at the University of Lincoln. But we figured that, we could have actually abandoned the Midweek Drive audience, or we could say, no, we would never abandon that. We need to continue the theme going. And that's what we're doing.
Very good.
So, allowing for some of the wonderful comments that we come through here, which I have to sort of quote the sheer joy and delights of Tim McGuire, who says, "One thing we know about you, Billy, you don't give up. Good luck this time." And then he actually talks about a whole range of things. Charlotte Buren, good luck and enjoy the swim. Clinton Leakes, not another made-up name, surely, is there? I mean, we're not.
Clinton's coming out here to do it with me.
Good Lord, I think it was another Robert Twigger. You know, also not made-up name, but Clinton Leakes. See you there, Bill. Swim with one arm twice as often, or float on to Istanbul. So, Bill, is this another case of I'm seeking more inspiration for my artistic urge, so when I'm next called upon to do a film script on swimming across the Bosphorus, I'll be sorted?
Partly. I'm a useless swimmer. I used to be a runner. I did some biggish races a few years ago, and then I thought I need to do something different, something that I'm really bad at, and that was swimming. And so I had some swimming lessons, a lot of swimming lessons, and decided to try and swim this iconic swim, the Hellespont, which is just below the Bosphorus. Most people don't know the difference between the two. And it took me ages to do it. I failed once, it was cancelled once, and then I finally squeaked in on the third attempt. And that was swimming from Europe to Asia, and now I thought I would try and get the double, which is the Bosphorus, which is in Istanbul and runs from the Black Sea to the Sea of Marmara, and that is swimming from Asia to Europe.
This is awesome stuff. It was Robert Twigger who used the words "the indomitable Coles." Good luck, old man, said Robert Twigger. Although I think my favourite comment that has come through this whole package probably has emerged from Lisa Naylor. Lisa Naylor, who says, and I quote, "I'll be with you in spirit, dear banana man." I presume that's not a euphemism, but yeah.
Lisa swam the Hellespont with me a couple of years ago. She's an Australian and a great swimmer. And before these morning races, you don't want to have much food, but you want to have a couple of bananas. And she bought a couple of my bananas from me at an exorbitant rate. And so that's what she means about the banana. Nothing else.
No, it's quite, I mean, as if one could. I mean, in these days, Bill, you know, we just don't know what's happening. The other line is, of course, she says, "One day come to Eastern Washington State to swim the snake," which sounds even worse, actually. That's swimthesnake.org if you wish to check that one through. As we said, strange things have been taking place. I don't know if you caught the furore that has really smashed through the entire world of British politics since you've actually been in Turkey. But after Roger Federer actually secured his 8th Wimbledon title, the news was broken that Roger Federer is not going to be the 13th Doctor. It is actually going to be a woman. It's going to be Jodie Whittaker, who is the new Doctor. And I did say to Tom Piercy, the Chief Executive Officer of the York Maze, Star Wars themed, so no worries about that, that I would quiz you on the notion of transgendered heroes, heroines, and the amount of vitriol. Even Peter Davison has said, it'll never be the same again.
Right, I'm afraid I haven't watched Doctor Who for a good 30 years or so. I think my kids aren't much interested in it. But what about a female James Bond? That would be step.
Yeah, you're the second person who's raised that, and I have to say, well, why not just call it a different character? Why not Modesty Blaze? Why not the notion of Nikita? Isn't Nikita La Femme Nikita a kind of Bond-esque?
All right, then. What about a female Harrison Ford for Indiana Jones?
Lara Croft? Lara Croft, perhaps? I mean, my point is, surely, wouldn't it be better if you just created new characters rather than actually transgenderifying the people that are actually already in place? It's just a thought, that's all. Yeah, a minor sort of
thing. Okay. I mean, do you actually watch Doctor Who?
I do, Bill, because I feel, you know, those of us who've been with it since the Patrick Tarleton era, and we also have the sad news that Deborah Watling sadly has passed away today, or a few days ago if you listened to this on Siren, that from that point of view, yes, I have for some. I suppose maybe it's comfort food. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's the notion of that. I'm sort of thinking, well, actually, this is my life being writ large here. It's very strange.
So who's her sidekick going to be?
Well, it has been suggested, but possibly by the Daily Mirror, so what do they know, that it could be Chris Marshall. Or she might not have any sidekick whatsoever. It may be so awesome that she... I mean,
oh, you've got to have a sidekick.
Well, this is it.
It's the foil. I'm your sidekick at the moment. I mean, otherwise it would just be you wittering on.
And there would be no exposition to explain to the audience what he's wittering on about. You know, it's the way you insert questions such as, but what do you really mean, Alex? You know, it's wonderful. It kind of takes us a step back and enables us, with a mild amount of entertainment, to provide that additional exposition. I see where you're going, Bill. Yeah, even on the telephone. Describe where you are in Turkey at present. Just set that scene in terms of what can you see, what sort of lines are there, and what's the count?
I'll tell you exactly where I am. I'm in a wonderful part of Sultanahmet, in a little cafe between the Hagia Sophia and the Blue Mosque. And one of the rather nice things about Istanbul is they have a lot of stray dogs. And the dogs are neutered and tagged and just wander around and can just do whatever they want. And they all look in very good shape, and so the dogs are wandering around. I'm sipping a beer, and they all carry on till about 2 o'clock in the morning. It's amazing. You have kids wandering around at midnight.
But is that safe, Bill? I mean, they've already had a coup in Turkey. I mean, surely if you have dogs wandering around, how do you sort of sort out who's a dog and who's a werewolf? I mean, it could be all sorts of areas there.
The dogs are all very well behaved. They know where to do their poop as well. I mean, they're not doing it in the middle of the place. They're all very discreet, and they know where they want to sleep at the night, and they do not, live and let live with the human beings. They never attack a human either. And as for the kids are just, it's incredible. They're all sort of mooching around after dark, and it's rather like, Spain or Italy, with everyone comes out at 10 or 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Which is usually the time when most British people are actually completely zonked out by the weather, the sangria and such like stuff, and they just can't cope anymore. It's a whole new world.
Exactly.
When is the swim, as we will refer to it, the swim, when is it due to take place?
The swim is on Sunday morning, mm-hmm. and we are shipped over from where most of us are staying in hotels on the European side, and we're shipped over in our Speedos and a boat on Sunday morning. And it's a pretty spectacular sight because all the swimmers are just wearing their Speedos, these little slippers and their goggles. Mm. And then on the other side, you just jump into the water and off you go. And the finish line is about 3 miles or 4 miles downstream. And so the current from the Black Sea to the Sea of Marmara is quite fast. It's about 4 knots or 5 knots. And it's very important to get the right part of the stream. And that is the middle. So basically, you swim as hard as you can out in the middle. And then there's no point really swimming at all. You just make like a cork. And at the critical point, you have to decide to start swimming over to the other side. Because if, obviously, you missed the finish line and are swept past it, there is no chance of getting back. And you'll be picked up by a fishing boat. So that all kicks off at, this race starts at 10 o'clock on Sunday.
We shall be following you. Are you putting the whole thing out on social media? Do we need to Instagram or Facebook? Is it going to be Facebook Live? Has Claire Balding actually been booked to come and speak to you? Because, I mean, that's ultimately... I mean, Claire's doing a fine job with the Women's European Championships, but, you know, at the end of the day, Claire, we love you, but why are you doing football? I don't know. Even Michael Owen looks a bit confused.
I should have a little camera.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, from my own point of view, I have to point out, and I know this might come as a shock to you, Bill, and possibly our listener as well, but I don't usually do Speedos. I've admitted it.
Well, yeah. Why was that? I thought that all that. What is the point in you spending all this time down at the gym to get this ripped body of yours?
Yeah, I know.
Without occasionally watching it.
It's such a tough call, but I feel no. You know, we just, you know, Speedos, no. Just step aside, step away from the Speedos. I maintained it in the 20th century, and I've stuck with it for the 21st as well. Who knows, 22nd century, I might change my views, but no. At the moment, in the current 100 years, Speedos, no.
Were you ever a Speedo chap, though? I mean, you know, when you were a stripling teenager?
In a past life?
Not around it.
I was a 6 a.m. in the morning tennis society of the University of London chap, but we didn't play in Speedos. We played in tennis whites. So, different line.
Anyway. Long trousers.
No, just shorts. That's the key thing. Obviously, shorts and a Fred Perry top, because otherwise it's just not the same, really. But topless tennis, again, not a good sign. And whilst we're at it in terms of minor gripes, if you happen to be male and you're listening to this and you're tempted to actually go topless whilst you're walking the streets of either Lincoln, Middlesbrough or any other town or city in the country, please don't. It's just not good. It's not impressive. I just don't think it's... I mean, you know, how many topless blokes do you actually see in Turkey at present, Bill?
We don't see... don't see many. I mean, you'll see a lot on this ferry on Sunday morning.
Yes, but that's in the water. That's in the water. You know, that's a different thing.
They wouldn't approve of blokes going topless. That would be...
Exactly. Exactly my point. You know, so that's it. So from that perspective, just bear it in mind. That's what shirts are for. Okay? Bill,
okay.
It's been surreal and wondrous as ever. Have you had...
Next time we speak, you'll have a full report.
Well, this is the critical thing, because I've got to ask you the question. Are you going to be able to join us sort of similar time in the new pre-recorded time slot for the Wednesday midweek drive? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
This is what it's all about. Brilliant. Still to come, Alan Stevens, Arthur Weingarten, Kaylee Carr from Sunderland, and a heap of other goodies as well. And you'll be pleased to know we'll be talking about Surfers Against Sewage. That's SAS, Surfers Against Sewage. Bill Coles, we salute you. Take care now.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
A different drum. Oh, can't you tell by the way I run? Every time you make eyes at me, whoa, you cry and moan and say it will work out. But honey child, I've got my doubts. You can't see the forest for the trees. You ain't pretty.
and with the words, "I've got to go now, the vicar's here," we turn to a fabulous dynamic duo of wonderful folk back in the day where we actually used to do a regular Saturday morning slot from the studio we're currently actually producing this particular production from. It's the return of Alan Moore and Fiona Stevens. How are you?
Alan Moore and Fiona Stevens?
You're quite right. Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore. It had to happen.
You know what? Last time I heard from you, you said, right, I'm going off to some pig farm show next week.
Yes.
Yes. A week after that, yes. 4 weeks later, and nothing at all. Listen, you've even forgotten my name.
Those porcines, once they actually get into your blood, we've had so many things to work through, Alan. Honestly, it's just been unbelievable. But there we are.
Porcine inhalation.
It's very, very strange. But anyway, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. And we'll start off with the serious line. Very sad news that a fine actress who actually her birthday is just the day before mine, actually. She was the 2nd of January, posted, I suppose, the 3rd of January. Deborah Watling has moved into the great time ship in the sky, and so another companion has left the planet.
Yeah, I am very young as well, 69. Mm-hmm. You know, which is. I first met Deborah Watling when I did my organized a convention what university was it now, Fiona? What Annie Brain used to go to?
Imperial
College University. Yeah. In 1985, and she came along and interviewed her, and she was very, very friendly. And afterwards, we kept in contact, and used to ring each other up. Actually, It was very nice. I kind of lost contact. I didn't lose contact later on, but you kind of drift. She was a very, very nice person indeed. And she also introduced me to her father at an event once and said hello. And he was appeared in Doctor Who, appeared in Abominable Snowmen, and played Professor Travers.
Yeah.
And funny, if you, watch that station we watched, Fiona, with all those new
talking pictures.
Yeah, watch talking pictures.
Yeah.
And he's often appearing on there, and also I think he was in a couple of episodes of Danger Man, which we've been watching recently. So really good actor, and really nice guy, and his daughter was a really nice person. So it was a bit of a shock actually when I heard she died. Although she apparently contracted cancer fairly recently. She has been fairly frail, I'd say, for the last 5 or 6 years.
Mm. Well, cancer can take a while, sadly. Yeah.
Well, I like yourself, I was fortunate enough to do a couple of interviews with her when she was actually on tour on a variety of stage plays in the Northeast and beyond in the 1980s, and like yourself, sadly, lost touch with her over the years. I know one of the regular contributors to the Stone Tapes, Fraser Hines, who, of course, was Jamie, will be, I think, very sad today. But, life continues, and we just have to maintain the best. But Deborah Watling, one of the good ones. As I'm sure people will say about Jodie Whittaker, possibly related to the Whittakers horse riding family in Yorkshire. She's a graduate of the University of Huddersfield.
Mm-hmm.
She's done wondrous things as far as Broadchurch is concerned, so she's known to the Chris Chibnall camp. And as I said to Alan earlier, in fact, we'll come to you first, Fiona, on this one. Surely the moment has been prepared for, to quote a pithy phrase, that actually once we had a female master with Missy and Michelle Gomez, it was only going to be a matter of time before that. I can't quite appreciate the level of vitriol. Yeah, exactly, that's been poured out.
It's not too surprising, but at the same time it is surprising. You know, on the one hand, this is long overdue. It seriously is. But on the other hand, there's always some people, as soon as they announced it, I was thinking, okay, there's going to be some reckoning on the internet now, let's go on Facebook and who's making with the tired jokes about women drivers or complaining that their childhood is ruined.
And again, it's the first day of Comic Con, clearly in the States now, and that's what we're doing. Peter Davison has got flack because he's very much against it. Colin Baker is for it. And you think, we don't want civil war here. We're science fiction fans, ultimately. Surely we should be bigger than this?
Except we're not. We're human beings.
The thing is, a lot of Doctor Who, perhaps not just Doctor Who fans, but there are a lot of fans can be very conservative, in their view of what the show is and what it can do and what it can't do and all that stuff. And so clearly you're gonna hit that as soon as you make any decision. Change the TARDIS into something else. Oh my God, no, you can't do that, because for 50 years the TARDIS has been this. I can understand that people, pin a lot to tradition and the idea that, there's a kind of continuity or a history to the show, and that this is, you know, follows along certain lines, and they don't like change. But equally, you know, I think that there is no reason why the Doctor can't be female, and the fact that, I mean, I know Tom Baker said it as a joke in 1981 when he said, you know, who knows who the next Doctor may, who he or she will be. Once he'd said that, he kind of blew the doors off it, didn't he? You know,
yeah.
After, you know, once he'd opened that flask, the genie was out the bottle, and it was only a matter of time. Now, the fact is it's taken so long for it to happen is incredible, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you go back to the Doctor before the idea of the Time Lords came about, you know, there was the idea that he may have been, I mean, when the production team had the idea that he might not have been human at all, but he was some kind of, you know, other creature, a form of energy or whatever, who decided that, you know, it wanted to examine us and it, you know, through doing that took on human form, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you know, if the Doctor can be, you know, an old guy or a young guy or a chap with blonde hair or a chap with blue eyes, or indeed if Romana can be a blue-skinned alien in Destiny of the Daleks, then it means that they can, you know, there is no reason why there can't be a gender shift.
Yeah.
And I think that, I'm not surprised by the reaction, but one thing that did encourage me was that there was an analysis was it the sort of internet thing, wasn't there? And they came up that apparently the people objecting to it are only 20%.
Yeah, 80% or less.
Are,
yeah,
or less. And 80% are in favor. So I'm not quite sure how that breakdown works with Not Who fandom, because this was just generally, you know, the general audience.
It may well be they were just saddened it wasn't Roger Federer who was emerging as the new Doctor. You know, they were very confused. They were tennis fans who was expecting a different line. Or indeed, will it be a hoodie as the Doctor? Mm. Because clearly that's another sort of line that's there. One suggestion I put forward earlier in the programme, and this is a possibility, if you really are very, very upset about the casting of a female, yes, an XX chromosomes carrying organism, life form, human being as the Doctor, consider it as an alternate timeline. After all, it was good enough for Star Trek, and in fact, claiming Star Trek, let's face it, Turnabout Intruder, episode 79 of the original series, Kirk's consciousness was swapped with Janice Lester, so for a moment you did have a female Captain Kirk.
That was actually true. I mean, I'm not sure about this alternative timeline thing. I mean, you know, there is a, you know, the Doctor will regenerate on Christmas and he will turn into a woman. There's no branching off from that. I mean, you know, whereas there was a distinct change, wasn't there, in the Star Trek franchise thing, the idea that somehow that time had been, I can't remember what it was now. But
it was the Kelvin timeline and the reboot and the destruction of Vulcan.
And again, but the idea of there possibly being you know, an alternative Star Trek, is not, it is part of the fabric of the show.
Yeah.
In Series 2, there was an episode called Mirror Mirror, where there was alternative
Star
Trek. Exactly. Yeah.
And in addition to that, you can also turn around, and you did ask me this as a challenge a few weeks ago before I got involved with the pig farm, what was the Star Trek thing? And surely, in the case of the Trill species from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, originally introduced in the host episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, there you have a life form that can exist symbiotically in either male or female scenarios.
Well, this is also true of Doctor Who, because of course there was Alpha Centauri, who was a hermaphrodite. Hexapod. And in fact, this isn't the first sex change we've had in Doctor Who. The very first sex change, as far as I'm aware, took place, you know, was effected in the Aztecs. Yeah. Yartek, the priest, the high priest Yartek, so was reincarnated in woman form. He was originally male, and then he came back as, or at least the Aztecs believed, as Barbara Wright. So, you know, it's not new. It was there in 64,
exactly.
In season 1, William Hartnell. Exactly. And yet no one goes on about, you know, I think it was disgraceful that Barbara came back. You know, it implied that Barbara had a sex change. It's just, it's, you know, it's a bizarre. I mean, there was a lot of people who complain about this, again, don't seem to know a lot about Doctor Who's history. I mean, there was some guy who had a petition on that change.org.com.
Yeah.
Ironically, came on to suggest that it should be changed back to a male. And he said, you know, Doctor Who, for over 60 years now, he's been male.
And let's face it, folks, what racist, sexist, borderline, intolerant person hasn't employed a certain amount of revisionist history to actually make their case? You know, it's the way it's forward. You know, we know that's going to happen. It's no big deal. So,
just because something has happened you know, over and over again in the past doesn't mean you've got to continue. That's a sign of madness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can I throw in another little question where, as I said, an interview which is being published this week, I believe, in the Lincolnite, when I was asked for my own views as an academic in terms of the female doctor with local press and so on. I personally would have preferred a female equivalent in terms of age to Peter Capaldi. So ideally a Miriam Margolyes, a kind of character from that point of view. I'm just not sure whether what we're going to get with Jodie Whittaker up to a point is going to be equivalent to David Tennant / Matt Smith in terms of the younger Doctor.
Well, yeah. I always used to argue that the best Doctor would have been Molly Sugden.
Well, there we are.
Of course, she's dead.
Yeah. Yes, why can't the next Doctor actually... But no, I won't go there. It's a zombie. Fiona.
Going back to Broadchurch, I mean, Broadchurch Series 1 is excellent. Broadchurch Series 2 and 3 are absolutely...
Yes,
yes. So, as the characters you played in Broadchurch, I think the character worked perfectly well in Series 1. But in Series 2, especially Series 3, actually, she seemed like just tacked on and was slightly annoying in that you thought, well, you don't actually have a role to play in this
well,
show.
The good news is she
that
would
isn't
be...
the criticism of Jodie Whittaker. Mm-hmm. That is a criticism of Chris Chibnall. Yeah. So the big problem now isn't that Jodie Whittaker, well, for me anyway, isn't that Jodie Whittaker has been cast. It's the fact that her seasons will be written or show-runned or whatever you want to call it by, you know, Chris Chibnall. And I don't rate him at all. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that if he, you know, messes up in a big way, then, you know, I can just imagine, you know, a large section of fandom or the Daily Mail or whatever saying, see, it failed because of Jodie. And it didn't fail because of Jodie. It failed because of Chris Chibnall.
Fiona, your thoughts on that? I mean, as I say, my ideal thought would have been initially a slightly more mature female from that perspective, because we're still in that sort of notion of casting somebody who's fairly photogenic.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I was thinking, you know, given that there's been a fair bit of briefing against Capaldi, yeah, so unjustified, if you ask me. I think he's a great doctor. Mm. You know, and I was thinking, you know, they will be casting somebody younger. And, you know, if they have to cast somebody younger to as the first female doctor, then fine, you know. At least they're, you know, they've got, you know, they're just shrieking about, my God, she's a woman. They're not shrieking, my God, she's a woman and over 50.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's a good point there, isn't there? I mean, the thing is that sometimes you've got to do things, you know,
slowly.
Pathetic in 2017,
yeah.
But gradually. So if you have a woman who is, you know, you could watch and think, wow, I'm not happy with her being doctor, but actually she is quite good looking, and I will watch the episode. And in fact, I quite fancy her. You know, that can actually, you know, be a facilitator. Do you mean?
Indeed.
Whereas, you know, they had a... Molly Sugden playing the Doctor, they'd probably think, well, this is a, you know, ridiculous, and there would be immediate barrier, not just of, you know, of sex, but age as well. So I can see what Fiona... I mean, I understand what you're saying, Alex. It is extraordinary that in 2017, in the 21st century, this discussion is even coming up.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah, and sadly we've got to deal with that. We can't deny it.
I mean, there was a really vile article in Daily Mail going on about, you know, how it was all political correctness gone mad and how, you know, that Moffat was anti-capitalist and bizarre stuff, you know.
Well,
and you think to yourself, you know, this is a national newspaper. I know their circulation has fallen off quite a lot in the last 10 years, but they still go out to, you know, a substantial, you know, portion of Britain. There's people who watch it reading this and picking their opinions up from this. And yet, you know, you would it strikes me as something you'd read in the 50s. It doesn't seem to have progressed at all, does it?
And speaking of that, from the Telegraph, of course, Stable, former Doctor Who Peter Davison says casting a woman means loss of role model for boys.
Yeah, well, that's ridiculous. I mean, I Peter Davison...
Yeah.
What can I say about Peter Davison?
His daughter's married to a doctor, for goodness sake.
Yeah, well, that's incest, isn't it? Because she played his daughter, and then he married the doctor's daughter. I mean, you know, that's going to screw with kids' minds.
And let's face it, now that the doctor actually has a TARDIS as written by Neil Gaiman, who's also female, then clearly the whole steps do go...
The thing is that, you know, Peter Davison is basically, by allowing his daughter to marry Davison, has condoned double incest. And so anyone who does that, I cannot write their opinion on a female doctor. Seriously, though, I mean, it might be I've met Peter Davison a number of times, and to be honest, you know, I think he's a good actor, and he's pretty good at Doctor Who on the whole, but he's a bit insecure, and at the time, you know, he was the one who followed Tom Baker, and he was the one who followed the idea of, you know, whoever he or she might be. And so perhaps there was some kind of, you know, unhappiness about the fact that, you know, that Tom Baker had made a joke out of his casting. I don't know, you know. But Colin Baker, you know, Colin Baker was...
he has responded by basically saying Peter Davis is talking nonsense.
Yeah, I think he has.
To be honest, it's, you know, it's good. It's actually made me respect Colin Baker a bit more.
Well, there we are, you see. So
No, I think Colin Baker's right. I mean,
his response throughout has been pretty good, and he's been tackling Twitter trolls about it.
So. The thing is, at the end of the day, the man who suggested it was Tom Baker. And Tom Baker is considered to be, you know, in spite of all his tenant living, the greatest man, or greatest actor, or not actor, but the greatest doctor. Mm. There has been.
Apart from those Patrick Troughton people like myself, of course. But
well, Patrick Troughton was expert, and what I'm saying is he's viewed by the majority.
Indeed.
You know, we had these polls, and Tom Baker would, and then the current doctor come in, it would always be, you know, Colin Baker, and then Tom Baker, in Doctor Who Magazine, and then Professor McCoy and Tom Baker. But it was always Tom Baker, and then suddenly when the show went off the air, you know, for about 17 years, whenever they had a poll, it was Tom Baker, best doctor. Mm. Now it's gone back to this thing again of, you know, of David Tennant and then Tom Baker. So Tom Baker is always there. Yeah, Patrick was excellent. There's no doubt about that. In fact, the first four doctors, I haven't got any problem with those at all. But the thing is that, you know, what I'm saying is that Tom Baker suggested it. And, you know, and I think that, you know, he did it in a kind of, you know, this kind of pixie-like comedy way. But you can kind of see, you know, he's an intellectual guy. There's nothing, there's no flies on Tom Baker. And you can see that, you know, by suggesting it, he effectively... You know,
you
can't unsay that. And he knew what he was doing. And I'm quite sure at Tom Baker moment he's having a, you know, whale of a time. He's already got a bottle of wine next to him and he's having a huge laugh, do you mean? And thinks also, this is a great idea. Mm. Peter Davison's having, if I was Peter Davison and I was against the idea, I just wouldn't have said anything.
Mm.
Because immediately he's thrown himself into this war, which he's never going to win, is he? Do you mean?
No.
You know? Well, he's effectively against the production team,
And let's not get started about a female James Bond, because that's another issue entirely, and because James Bond...
They're on a bit, bringing back...
I know, but anyway, let's move on, because we've got time is moving.
No, just to go to James Bond for a second, Felix Leiter is in played by a black guy.
Yeah.
Yes, and several other white chaps as well.
M's been female.
Yes.
You know, you couldn't in any way say that Sean Connery looks anything like John Roger Moore. I mean, they're both similar...
Precisely.
Similar, you know.
Unless it's a code for 007. The day after this...
Well, that's what I think it is. That idea of 007 being, you know, that being a code name which everyone played, that was actually introduced as far back as the Casino Royale film with David Niven, where Woody Allen is also
007. Yeah, yeah.
Now, on a slightly different note, I know, because I produced the show, exactly what the listener will know the day after this programme has actually been broadcast on Siren, which is what the views of David J. Howe, and indeed the organiser of the Long Island Doctor Who convention, make of the final series. So I won't share them, because they'll go out there, but from your own point of view, Alan, given that we had that little interruption, that mini hiatus with respect to the regular routines, what were your feelings on the closing of the last Peter Capaldi episodes before we go to the Christmas special, of course?
Well, to be honest, I liked it. I thought that, I mean, I the thing is, it was, there is always this kind of repetition of ideas, and if you look at this, what happens to Bill, you can go back and say, well, basically, this is the same damn thing that happened to
the Brigadier.
Clara. But the difference is that I liked Bill.
Yeah.
And when watching it, you know, I felt, you know, I kind of, you know, felt sad, you know, all the way through, especially part two, you know, that she was dying or was taken to war, or she was kind of saved in a way, but it was a kind of like Doctor Who heaven, wasn't it? Like Silicon Heaven or whatever, you know. They, you know, she dies, but she is transformed in the same way as, I suppose, Riversong is transformed in Download or whatever. But, you know, I actually generally felt upset about it, and I didn't feel anything for Clara. I think Clara was completely... you know, utterly uninvolved, engaging. Die, Clara, please, I'll do it if you won't, you know. So on that level, I think that, you know, if you've got a... I think a lot of people seem to misunderstand that if you have good characters, then even poor stories are elevated by that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've recently watched all 52 episodes of Blake 7, and there are some death episodes, but because the dialogue is still fun, and because the characters are still engaging... it doesn't entirely matter. It's great when the episodes are good. That makes that everything. That's everything working at all levels. But if the story isn't so good, but the characters are still intriguing, then you can kind of get away from that. And I think that one of the things that kind of, especially if it helps the last story, although I think the last story wasn't bad, is the fact that you did engage with Bill Potts, and you kind of loved her, you know. So, you know, the impact was far greater when she, you know, is cybernized and then is weeping over it, and then is kind of taken on a lesbian heaven. Do you mean? So, you know, I'd say that the last story was pretty good, you know, but I would say the season on the whole was a bit. What do you reckon, Fiona?
A bit uneven. I mean, I have to watch it back, really, but, you know, there were some good stories. There were some rather less good stories.
Yeah. I think that the season I least enjoyed was the previous one, did it? So what was that? Was it season 9 or what was it?
I think so, yeah.
It was season 10, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm terrible on counting, but,
yeah,
you know.
Okay.
It should really be season 33 or 34, but let's not go there.
Whatever,
it's a different line.
Yeah. But whatever, the one with a shield in, I just found that utterly tedious, to be honest. And, again, this season, I wasn't entirely... I mean, I very much liked the first episode, and I very much liked the last episode. But the ones in between, I still haven't gone back and watched that Icewire story. I mean, having said that, though, you hear a lot of stuff about ratings. Oh, Doctor Who's ratings are down, Doctor Who's ratings are down. But in fact, I was going through it recently with a friend of mine, and what has gone down is the Christmas specials. The Christmas specials usually got between 10 and 12 million, and now they get, on average, about 7.5 million to 8 million. So there has been a drop of about 2 million on that one. Equally, when the season begins, usually the first episode of the season would get between 10 and 11 million, and they get about 7.5 million, which again is a huge drop. But the fact is, generally throughout the season, the audience is 7.5 million, and that is consistent with every other season of Doctor Who. So it seems that, you know, there is a core of people who watch a show, but new people aren't actually coming in and giving it a chance or watching anymore.
And we'll see how that transpires. Alan, it's been fantastic as ever. Likewise, Fiona. So,
yep.
Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens. We had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us
today. Yeah, I think that was
a great one, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most interesting ones we've had, actually.
So are you back with us next week where we can do a similar kind of thing from the studio that, of course, used to be renowned for the fact that we used to do it every Saturday morning at about 11:30, except we're switching it to a Friday. It's all...
Fiona won't be...
I'll be back in London, I'm afraid.
At the moment is that due to Brian and various medical reasons...
Don't worry, Alan, will you be back with us?
I will be back, but perhaps we should alternate between Fiona and myself.
And let's do that. Let's go with that. And Fiona, we'll connect with you as well. We'll use that wonderful magical thing called the email system to communicate.
We shall indeed.
Exactly. And for the moment, many thanks.
Better than Blackboard.
Don't get me started on that with the latest update that's come through, please. It's just Lord above. That's a whole series.
We have an academic audience,
exactly.
They'll get the joke.
Meanwhile, we're still going to San Diego to speak to Arthur Weingarten, Kaylee Carr in Sunderland, and a heap of other things. A reminder, you can go to caldorcity.com to find out lots of good Magical Bullet productions. Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore, we salute you. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Burning by my bed for you here now. I can feel my instincts here for you here now. By my bed for you here now. Here now. Precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world.
if that's all we have. You will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us with the cares of the world far behind us. We have all the time in the world just for love, nothing more, nothing less, only love. Find us with the gifts of the world far behind us. Yes, we have all the time in the world just for love, nothing more, nothing less, only
love. This is Rosie Langhorne, and you're listening to Alex Lefchuk and the team on the Midweek Drive.
Splendid. And now, as promised, we head off to San Diego for our usual monthly correspondence chat and natter with that ace guru of writing, of production. It's the one and only Arthur Weingarten. How are you, Arthur?
I'm well, Alex. I'm well.
Excellent.
Thank you.
This is great stuff. And actually, it's a first because the studio we're recording the program in this time round, although it's going out on our usual Wednesday slot, is actually one of the first studios we worked. But I don't know if we've ever actually connected using a studio that's been based up in Teesside for Lincoln. It's very strange, but still, that's the magic of radio. It's all there. Give me a desk, no matter where in the world, and I can usually drive it to get some sort of tune out of it, really. At least
do you know what image I have in my mind? Is the 1930s Paramount News things, the eyes and ears of the world. That's
yeah.
What you are.
Oh, my word. Well, I don't know if the furore that has been discussed on the program so far has actually emerged over in the States, but the amount of comments that's been made over the fact that the next Doctor Who is actually going to be a woman. It's
yes, we've seen that here. Yes,
so,
she's attractive.
Exactly. This is very true. But my point is, why should we be really concerned about an alien species that effectively is time lords, time ladies, etc.? Does it really matter? Or have we reached a state? Is it? I mean, it could have been worse. They could have had Rowan Atkinson as the Doctor, and I would have had to start watching that.
I'm going to be forever bound to that little pop-eyed factoid.
Well, I'm sure he'll be a fine soul, but not as May Gray. Still, there we are.
I'm probably maligning an awfully nice fellow.
Exactly. And technically, of course, in the comic relief sketch a few years ago, he did portray the Doctor, so there we are. Arthur, as a producer, if somebody came to you and said, look, we've got this great idea for a reboot of Murder, She Wrote, except for the actual lead character, we'd like her to be played by a man.
Yeah.
What would your response be?
Well, it wouldn't be anything because if you've been in the business long enough, I remember once a fellow coming in when I was doing Mod Squad, a fellow came in and he said, listen, you know, if you're in the market for sequels, I've got one. And I said, oh, yes, what is that? He says, let's make them Chinese. So that was it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you see, when creativity is bubbling, boy, you just don't want to stop it.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, though. That, I mean, there are certain lines, which, as I said, I think should remain sacrosanct. I mean, one wouldn't necessarily want Gal Gadot or Linda Carter in their incarnations as Wonder Woman replaced by a man in the same scenario. You know, that probably wouldn't work.
Well, Wonder Man wouldn't exactly pull him in.
This is true. Although, actually, Arthur, there was a Wonder Man in a Marvel Comics creation that emerged in the 1960s. So there has actually been a Wonder Man, but it's a different zone, etc. I must admit, I was very surprised and a little disappointed with our fellow citizens on the planet Earth, although if they voted for the kind of presidents that we got, that, you know, just the level of vitriol that was being poured out, that I thought, surely we're better than this, really? You know, we don't need this sort of thing.
No, I know it's terrible to be a downer, but I don't think we are. I think it gets worse and worse and worse. As a matter of fact, to show you how bad it gets, I'm looking as we're talking here, my attention is not divided, but I have today's New York Times in front of me, and one of the headlines in a subhead is, they hated the health law until the idea of repeal sank in, and under a photograph of a man wearing a suitable Let's Make America Great Again red hat, he says, I can't even remember why I voted for him.
Right.
Okay, so 6 months to the day yesterday is when this giant gas bag took office, and this man, who is in Tennessee, cannot even remember why he voted for him. Yeah. So you tell me what the hope of the human race is on you. Because if you extrapolate it out, I mean, whether it's Somali or Four Oaks, it isn't going to happen. Brains don't suddenly, you know, emerge after millions of years in a different form.
Well, I mean, maybe in deference to the chap in question, maybe he just had a particularly bad night out and it was a hangover. Maybe it's like a major hangover.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I just adore you. You always have a way out to start a new line.
Well, it's a thought. And speaking of which, we've got a little quiz for you, Arthur, today, because I thought, well,
yes.
Introduce you.
Yeah.
I've got 1 minute, 60 seconds of a theme tune of a series that I've actually started re-engaging with, actually. It's a classic series from the 60s, and I think actually it's often seen as an underrated classic. Your task is to hopefully identify this. Are you ready, Arthur?
I am.
Here comes the theme. Any thoughts, Arthur Weingarten?
It to me has the classic feel, just as George Gershwin to embody New York goes, bum, 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 that kind of business. I see the far west, the American West, and I would want to say, although I don't think it really is, wagon train or...
Close.
Things like that.
Keep going. All right, I'll give you a few clues. Richard Long, Peter Breck, Linda Evans, Lee Majors.
Yeah, now I I'm mixed up.
And now I'm going to give you the cherry on the top of that, Barbara Stanwyck, rather.
Barbara. Oh yes. I have it,
yes.
But I don't.
The Big Valley.
Yes.
The Big Valley.
Yes, exactly. Isn't it interesting? Just like I say to Annette when she shows me pictures from way back when she was doing television and theater in Australia, and we go through the pictures. I said, isn't it amazing how Australian men look Australian? And this is this and this. How do you write music like that that says the American West? Why would I think that?
But George Dunning, of course, was the composer, and the story, of course, yeah. of the Barclay family based in Stockton, not to be confused with Stockton Teesside, but this was Stockton in Southern California, and the lines from that perspective. I having rediscovered it on DVD, actually a German DVD, German box set that I sort of collected recently with the Complete, the first stuff off, first season. And it's a wonderful series because it's from a time where very much you were harder. I mean, I would have said it's a perfect series, but clearly you didn't do any shows for the Big Valley, which is a great shame. You know, clearly they missed a trick.
No, because I remember when that was on, I was doing the $6 Million Man.
Probably you were doing the Green Hornet or the Wild Wild West, because $6 Million Man
was
1970s.
Yes, I know I was at Paramount.
Yes.
I remember when that was on.
Yeah.
And they had called me. They asked, could I do some? And I couldn't do it. My contract wouldn't allow me to do any other work.
One of the aspects about it, though, which in some ways we've gone back to with Netflix and other areas, did you feel that the format, as a writer, of the 52-minute series actually gave you more room to develop and allow the characters to breathe than the current vogue, certainly for network television, of it's got to be 40 minutes?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. Mm. You know, even when you have the constraint of knowing there's going to be, in the early days of the hour shows, we had three acts and then it came to be four acts. But even though you knew the commercial was coming up, it made you write, I think, in a more sharp and incisive way.
Yeah.
You got rid of a lot of garbage and got to the meat of the thing,
sure.
but without seeming to rush it. Whereas today, I can pretty well predict what's going to end a certain scene. Because
yes,
they have that time constraint.
With the teaser trailers and other elements. Of course, it comes
yes,
at a time
yeah.
which probably we won't return to the high spot of westerns on air, because in addition to Big Valley, there's Bonanza, of course, High Chaparral, you mentioned Wagon Train, Gunsmoke. They're very much echoing, and this is something which I'm reflecting on now, an America which actually was very young, which was still full of the West, Wild West mythologies, as put forward by Wild Bill Hickok and the Ranger things from that point of view. And yet, as I say, it's interesting that, with a few notable exceptions, and there have been one or two attempts to kind of revisit the Western genre, the Western seems to have been replaced almost with science fiction, I would say, as a sort of current genre or generic vogue. Do you think we'll ever get back to seeing Westerns like The Big Valley and The Bands, or is it a case of, no, they were of their time?
No, I don't. I think the current generation, which Netflix is depending its success on and seems to have called the shot, is that the younger generation is not ready for dust being kicked up by four legs on an animal.
Yeah.
I don't think that's it. I think what science fiction does is what the West had done. It satisfies a what-if thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
In my generation, when you went to see a Western, it was a simpler life with white and black hats, but you could make the illusion that it's still attached to the life you were living somewhat, whereas science fiction really sends you out, or should, I think. I think if you can, where the Twilight Zone is not science fiction, in the purest sense.
But it was perfectly crafted writing, and Rod Serling, I think. And
produced some wonderful, wonderful series.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, in science fiction, if you want to do it, Star Wars, although routed in a world today, still sent you out there in possibilities and outer limits and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas the Western, I don't think it's relevant to a generation that has Netflix today.
Although I will actually raise my hand and say I still would maintain one of the best musicals that I've ever encountered, and I still find myself humming There's a Coach Coming In, Wandering Star, and Hand Me Down That Can of Beans has to be Paint Your Wagon.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. Without a doubt, yeah. That the score was absolutely beautiful and all that. And another one is Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Yes, I've never quite sort of been happy with the notion of kidnapping women to become your bride, though. That's the whole notion. There's a huge issue there, which kind of I put in the same line as the Black and White Minstrels. Well, I think I'm not sure really.
Yes, but who could dance like Russ Tamblyn in an orange silk blouse?
Well, that's true, of course. You know, so I have to sort of revisit that whole thing. Did you ever want to, or do you ever feel like that you actually fancied doing a musical, Arthur? I mean, in terms of
I tried with the Sherman Brothers.
Of course, there's still Brigadoon out there.
Yes, there's still Brigadoon. I'm not going to live that one.
No, it'll happen. I know it will. It might be only every 900 years or so, but it will happen.
Right. Yes. No, but what I did with the Sherman Brothers, I took an obscure H.G. Wells novel called Tono Bungay, in which he was doing a put-down of the turn of the late 1890s advertising, the snake oil salesman and things like that, and he invented a hair tonic. Miracle Hair Tonic, and the book was a satire and all of that, and just lovely, but forgotten. And I wrote a treatment and a screenplay and brought it to the Shermans, and they loved it, and they wrote four songs, and we couldn't get arrested.
It's outrageous.
We tried for years.
We should reemerge it now, get Netflix on the case, and then magical things will happen.
To show you the thing, I sat in their studio, which was just down the block from where I had my office in Beverly Hills. They were also there, and they had a tacky piano. A tacky piano was a piano that had thumbtacks in the key strings so that it sounded like a barrel organ whenever you wanted it. And they wrote this song, Tono Bungay, Tono Bungay, use a drop every day, da 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 da. And I thought to myself, well, at that time, isn't that wonderful? Well, no one else thought so.
Arthur, it was ahead of its time. That's all I will say. It was ahead of its time. I could almost hear Justin Bieber's people saying, now, this is the next sound. This is the sound of the 2020s. It's definitely going to happen. Anyway, movie. I mean, Arthur, as ever, it's been a nice Western smorgasbord to actually sort of share with us a few bits and pieces. And your reward is actually a choice of music. Now, also fairly short, three Western themes, and you choose which one the listener gets to sort of savour for the next few minutes. Bonanza, of course, High Chaparral, or indeed Wagon Train.
Oh, Wagon Train.
You're going to go for what? So, well, I'm afraid that the Cartwrights have lost out. The Joys of High Summer. You've gone for Wagon Train. Here it comes. Too many radio shows that effectively have a fantastic American producer writer in just outside San Diego listening to American themes played down the telephone line from the north of England.
Certainly, I didn't think it was going to be a morning like that, and no. I'm happier for it.
Exactly.
I really am, yes.
It's a way forward where movie and TV
and
themes
again,
were.
Isn't it interesting how the composers of this had a vision like Ferdy Grofe with Grand Canyon, where you actually can visualize the Monument Valley and, you know, and Grand Canyon and this and that. I find it extraordinary that the brain can do that. That you literally come up with an image of the American West, or it could be the Australian outback, whatever. But nevertheless, vast plains and monumental things that have to be done.
And of course,
very exciting.
As has been pointed out, the original pitch to Desilu Studios or NBC, as it became connected by Gene Roddenberry for Star Trek, was indeed a Wagon Train to the Stars.
Yes, that's exactly
that's
right.
Some marvellous stuff. Exactly. Arthur, as ever, it's been a sheer delight. I think we've managed to sort of work through a number of keys. As you say, the Midwick Drivettes haven't found their way to the studio as yet, so I'm sure they will be with us the next time, and who knows what will be happening. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program?
I have had more than always a reasonable time. It's been lovely.
So yes. I take it as you look out onto the vast vistas of it. You see, when you listen to music like that, it makes you realise that actually, forget the people who voted for the wrong president. There is good in the world, because they can't remember anyway. So it's all good.
Well, I don't know who the right president would be, but this certainly is the wrong one.
Now, you know my thoughts on that. If we can't have President Weingarten, we should actually sort of have President Annette Andre. You know, it's got to be one or two.
Please don't ship Theresa May over here.
Bless her heart, she doesn't quite know where she's going. It's
a different
line entirely.
On the other hand, you know, if Music Hall comes back, these two might not make a bad act.
This is so true. Exactly. It's May and Trump. Trump and May.
Yes,
it's the
snappy songs and patter.
Yeah. That's it. That's a strap line. You know, the Abbott and Costello of the 21st century.
Right. Oh, please, we're denigrating.
I take it you'll be back with us again in the very near future then?
I certainly hope so. Yes. Yes.
Hearts gone astray, deep in hurt when they go. I went away just when you need me so. You won't regret, I've come back begging you. Won't you forget? Welcome, love we once knew. Open up your eyes, then you realize, here I stand with my everlasting love. Need you by my side, girl, to be my bride. You'll never be denied, everlasting love. From the very start, open up your heart, feel that you're part of everlasting love.
Need a love to last forever. Need a love to last forever.
As has been effectively pointed out, as we're currently recording this series of summer specials in a different studio from our normal Lincoln base and in the Southside studios, in many ways the paternal line of Siren FM, up in Teesside, there's absolutely no reason at all why in the very near future we shouldn't actually welcome back to the on-air studio for a whole show our Sunderland correspondent, who might have difficulty getting all the way to Lincoln, which is clearly about 200, a little under 200 miles away from Sunderland, more about 170 miles. But maybe to Teesside, maybe Kaylee Carr will actually join us in the studio for a whole show. What say you, Kaylee Carr?
Hello! Yeah, I'd absolutely love to come to Teesside. Yeah. I was trying to work out the days of when I'm free. Hopefully get a full show in very soon.
Exactly. Yeah. This is it, you see. You could speak to, I mean, already on the programme, the joys of Tom Piercy of the York Maze, William Coles from Turkey, no less, on the River Bosporus, Alan Stevens from the Vale of Glamorgan? I think it is Vale of Glamorgan. Anyway, over in the West Country. Arthur Weingarten from San Diego, and soon to be joined, not today, of course, by Phil Leonis from Los Angeles. So you see, why shouldn't you actually sort of be here as a midweek drivette, claiming your righteous role as a fine co-presenter on the midweek drive? There it goes. and anyway, Kayleigh, we've got to have somebody to effectively share the delights of Simon Grayson, the man currently in charge of Sunderland Football Club, as they set up a whole new range of activities and delights in the Championship. I know the Kayleigh Carr family will be sort of delighted at that, because let's face it, you wanted to go to the Championship for many a year. You've spent all that time trying to get out of the Premiership. Year in, year out, finally you achieved relegations. Congratulations.
Oh, no. What a nightmare. It comes as no surprise, to be honest.
And the joy, of course, being you went down with Middlesbrough whilst Newcastle went the other way. What a joy for the North East.
I know.
So, you know, all good. Who would have thought that we'd have a situation, a season, where Middlesbrough and Sunderland and York City and Hartlepool and Hull City will have all been relegated, leaving just the one side run by a Spaniard and, of course, a London businessman to actually fly the flag for the North East next year. Strange but true.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, well, exactly. The question that we've been debating on the programme today, Kayleigh, and you have the right to surmise all of these things, because the next feature is actually all about SAS, that's Surfers Against Sewage. It's such a troublesome thing. The female doctor, a woman as Doctor Who. The big shock, of course, being that Kayleigh Carr did not take up the role as the next occupant of the TARDIS. It did indeed go to the actress Jodie Whittaker. Kayleigh, is it a case of, I'm shocked beyond words, I don't really care, I've never watched Doctor Who in my life, what are you asking me for? I do something completely different now when I'm graduate from Teesside University. Where do you pitch yourself?
To be totally honest, I've never actually been much of a fan of Doctor Who, but I did see the news that obviously new Doctor was going to be a woman, which I think will be very different spin on it. So yeah, I think it'll be quite interesting, to be honest, but different.
Is it going to serve as the basis for a Unwrap a Pretty Puzzle blog post?
It may well do. Keep an eye out.
Which I just led in there, because clearly people can access the thoughts of Chairman Katie Kayleigh on a regular basis by going to which blogspot site?
It is unravelapprettypuzzle.wordpress.com.
See, I'm glad you said that, because if people had gone off to unwrap a pretty puzzle as opposed to unravel a pretty puzzle, they would have gone to something completely different. She can't be doing that at all. How is Sunderland shaping up in these wonderful July days of sunshine, happiness and a routine? Is Sunderland still the happening place? And I've got to ask you the question. Sunderland has recently put in a bid to become, and it's been shortlisted, more than that, been shortlisted to be the next European City of Culture in 2021.
It certainly has, yeah, I saw that. Very interesting, yeah.
I mean, that's gone down so well with Middlesbrough people, it's just unbelievably sort of wonderful. I mean, we're obviously celebrating the fact that, we're nowhere near. In fact, we've even got our mayor now effectively saying, let's just call ourselves a city, nobody cares, you know. I mean, it's work on that basis, but still, that's for the life. Do you think Sunderland has a chance, or do you think, no, it's going to go to somewhere completely different?
I'd like to think so, yeah. There is, like, quite a, like, good sort of culture here, lots of different things. Obviously, I'm too used to it because I've lived in Sunderland ever since I was born. But, yeah, I think for new people coming into the city, it is really nice, yeah. There's a lot to kind of offer within the area and stuff, so...
Well,
fingers crossed we get it.
Given that Hull, of course, is currently still the European City of Culture, and it's got that European City of Culture status, and one of the things they did in Hull, and I interviewed one of the people who did this, was to actually take off all their clothes, cover themselves in blue paint, and march through the streets of Hull. Will you actually be covering yourselves in red and white paint, taking off all your clothes, and marching through the city of Sunderland? Is that for you, Kayleigh, or is it a case of, no, that's where I draw the line?
I don't think that's for me, unfortunately. No.
See, Kayleigh, I don't know what happened to, in the words of Jenny Finch, the Kayleigh Carr who was so adventurous she'd take all these on board. You know, Kayleigh, you've got to seize that moment. You know, seize the whole sort of thing.
Dear, I've gone too shy.
Well, precisely. Exactly. I'm sure the Carr family will be saying, ah, oh, our daughter was also... Never mind. This is what work does for you, of course. Meanwhile, what else have you been filling your cultural aspects with? I mean, have you been checking out War on the Planet of the Apes, or is it a case of, no, I don't do the cinema, I'm waiting for Dunkirk?
No, I haven't been to cinema in a while, actually. Just been... usual thing, lots of work, blogging when I can, but obviously it's a Sunderland Air show this weekend as well, which I'm hoping to pop down to tomorrow.
Well, that'll be great, because, I mean, the Sunderland Air show is one we've talked about covering, but I've never quite got round to, and clearly we will be getting our press passes with a few hours to go, but I'm sure it'll be wonderful. In fact, by the time you're listening to this in Lincoln, it'll already have been, so it was a fine Sunderland Air show, and we can just sort of say, don't forget, we've got the RAF Scampton Air show coming up in September, so
that's
looking ahead to that. Are you an air show aficionado, or is it just a case of you like the men in uniforms?
No, actually, I'm quite fascinated by all the planes and stuff. It's like a really joyful event, lots of things to get up to. Just fingers crossed, though, that rain stays off, because we've had a lot of that lately.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Of course, the tragedy of Roker Park, or let's use the vernacular, Roker Park, is that it no longer has the converted restaurant come engine diner that, of course, was the site of our last official visits to Sunderland, because I think that's closed down and ceased to be, effectively. So there's no longer that sort of dining car system.
Yeah, it's completely gone. It's different, yeah.
Have they not even put a blue plaque up to say this was the site of the last meeting between Kaylee Carr and Alex Lefchuk, you know?
They should, shouldn't they?
Well, you know, I mean, it's got to be... sometimes I just wonder about the founding fathers of Sunderland. What would they think about this whole system? But other than that, obviously you can check out The Delights of Roker and see all manner of wondrous things from that perspective. Have you ever considered Kaylee actually becoming a fighter pilot yourself?
I don't think that's quite for me either. Although it will be very exciting. I remember a time when I went up in a helicopter and it was one of the best experiences ever. But yeah, I don't think I'd have kind of the guts to go so fast past each other and all the rest of it, doing all the turns upside down.
I think it's a way, it's possibly a career change, admittedly, but you know, it's a way, worth considering anyway. And moving on from that point of view, anything else that's happening in Sunderland that you'd like to flag up? You say, yeah, actually, people should come along and check this out.
In all honesty, I'm not quite sure what's happening, apart from obviously the air show, which I'm hopefully going to go along
and
to.
That, dear listener, is why Kaylee Carr is the number one tourist guide for Sunderland you could ever wish for. So I don't know what's going on, but it's there. Just come up to Sunderland. Why? Because I live here. End of. You know, Kaylee Carr. Don't worry. You know, it's okay. I tell you what, we'll set this little task for you. If you can't make it to the studio next week, you need to actually give us some reporting back on the Sunderland Air Show and find at least three cultural events that people who maybe quite fancy checking out Sunderland would like to actually visit. It can be something like visiting Palliser Park. It could be something like checking out Rogue. But it's up to you. Are you up for fulfilling that challenge, Kaylee Carr?
I certainly am. That sounds brilliant. Yeah, I'll take it on.
it's like our added bonus summer special. And I know that Phil Dearness will be listening to this and also want to follow through on that, even though as the way this show is being produced, he can't listen to it as it's actually happening. It's a different line. It's already there. I know what's been happening on the show. And the listener will know by now, if they've been listening all the way through, what's happened on the show. But Phil, it'll all be new to him. Kaylee, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I certainly have, as always,
Well, as I said earlier to Arthur Weingarten, some of the Midrick drivettes, they've got lost on the A19. They don't know where they're heading, but, you know, we'll probably have a few sort of folk coming along in the studio. Maybe even yourself, as we said at the start, will return to Teesside for one of these 5-7 events on an evening on a Friday, so you know, whilst we're in the Sunday. And if you're listening in Lincoln, you're saying, but it's only coming up to 6:25 in Lincoln on a Wednesday. That's because the Midrick drive is currently being pre-produced for you in a glorious package in a different studio, whilst of course the aspects of the University of Lincoln are changed structurally, because let's face it, Kaylee, you wouldn't want friendly neighbourhood presenters to actually have to do that entire show in hard hats and high-vis jackets because of fear of working scenarios. You know, that's why we had to sort of move away and produce it elsewhere. Very confusing, but it works.
Yeah. Brilliant. No, that sounds good. Yeah.
Excellent. So the bottom line is, you will return.
I certainly will, of course,
yeah.
This song was written by an old friend of mine In the old days of Queen touring, years and years and years and years ago, we used to tour about 9 months of the year, and most of it in America. And we had a band with us called Kansas. Fantastic guys from Kansas, of course. And they did a lot of very up-tempo stuff, but they did also beautiful ballads, and this is one of them. It's called Dust in the Wind.
I close my eyes only for a moment, then the moment's gone. Before my eyes, a curiosity, dust in the wind. All they are is dust in the wind. Same old song, just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground, though we refuse to see. Dust in the wind, all we are is dust in the wind. Dust in the
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.